Guaranteed to last longer than Tom Brady's retirement. Welcome to the F1 2022 season preview on Motorsport 101. And before anyone asks in the comments, it was too easy. I couldn't not do it. It was an open goal. Hi guys, welcome to episode 346 of Motorsport 101. I'm Dre Harrison, your friendly neighborhood host, and this is the one you've all been waiting for. It's the F1 2022 season preview, the main event of season preview season. And I love that. Spoiler alert, folks. None of us have any idea what's going to happen this weekend. And that's great.
Yeah, complete crapshoot.
It's a complete shithouse, but we're going to try and get through this season anyway. Because what's the worst that could happen, besides a pile on social media, obviously? With me this week, as always, Mr. RJ O'Connell. Hello, sir.
You want to know how prepared I am for this? My research consisted of everything that I overheard during all the testing, because I didn't get to observe much of it. Watching a couple of videos and reading a couple articles on the Formula One YouTube channel, I think I'm good. I think I feel prepared to give accurate, adequate assessments of what this Formula One season is going to be like. It's all part of LK Kaku. Translator's note, LK Kaku means L plan.
L plan indeed. I think he's overqualified. What do you reckon?
Yeah, because I think I watched one session of testing and pretty much, you know, keep my ear on the ground to hear any rumblings of what people feel about the teams going in, and that's it.
Pretty much. What do you reckon, Cam?
Well, you know, after being forged in the fires of Gran Turismo 7 license test S10, I had to unwind from the screaming, crying, and emotional damage that did by watching some F1 testing.
I think we have...
I recapped on basically all of the F1 testing, and I have no fucking idea who's going to win this year. There's no point in picking any of this.
So, between me, Dre, and Cam, King, do you have GT7?
No, I do not have.
We almost had quorum. We almost had quorum here.
I watched one whole session because I was too busy installing this. But those guys are all watching on video.
You too?
I have joined the club. It is like having a suitcase on my desk, but it is glorious.
It is. It is a chonky boy.
It is extremely chunky. It is literally the size of my torso. It's incredible. And I don't go to the gym, so that's not a good sign. But yes, you now get to enjoy my new paperweight in all its glory. It was not cheap. Setting up the OnlyFans account as we speak. But in the meantime, we're going to go through team by team, as well as the schedule and some of the other bigger news that we're going to get through in this season preview of all the F1 teams. Some of the things that may end up making a difference may not. We'll have to wait and see. We'll try and figure out how this grid is going to shake itself out by the time 2022 starts. We'll be going in reverse championship order from last year, so Haas will be up right after I plug where you can find us. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com, same address, at motorsport101. Twitter at motorsport_101. Our personal handles are on the screen right now. If you're not listening on YouTube, that's at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, at CBucky917, and at Ryan Eric King. Our Instagram, motorsport101pod. All our content updates up on there and some bonus stuff as well. And you can find all of that and much more on our website at motorsport101.com, including some bonus content from our MotoGP episode last week where I talk about stewarding, because that's always fun. By the time this episode goes up, that post will be up as well, so you can check that out as well. So all our written stuff is in the blog section. All of that is cool. Let's get into our F1 2022 season preview. Oh boy,
well,
here we go.
Haas F1 team.
Wait, RJ, why isn't it Uralkali Haas F1 team?
Suffice to say that a lot happened in the last few weeks. So, if you don't know, Vladimir Putin, has staged a hostile invasion of neighboring Ukraine. The Western world has put down the harshest sanctions on the Russian Federation that we've seen in years. How does this impact Formula One? Yuri Kalli is gone from Haas. Nikita Mazepin is gone from Haas. In their place, Kevin Magnussen is back in the sport partnering Mick Schumacher. Gene Haas actually had to address this. He said to Jenna Fryer of the Associated Press, "There was a lot of intense criticism about the Ukrainian invasion, and it was just getting overwhelming. We can't deal with that. Our other sponsors can't deal with all that. We're in the process of looking at several candidates. We'll see who's available and what we have to deal with." And that was before they opted to pick up Kevin Magnussen, who, by the way, left Peugeot's upcoming WEC hypercar program, which was getting delayed till after Le Mans. And even then, winning Le Mans was not a guarantee. Gene also recently stated the team's still financially stable. He said, "We're good. We're fine." These are quotes. "We'd like more money, of course, but we're fine," he said. "This just gives us a bigger negative number." Boy, this whole thing evolved in real time from the first day of the Barcelona test till now. But suffice it to say, gonna be an interesting year for Haas, who, dare I say, after the Bahrain test, I think tanking 2021 didn't do them all that bad a job.
You look real good. I go back to last year, and we could tell how bad they were going to be, not when they got on track, but when they took the cover off the car. And we saw that it was as minimum effort as was humanly possible to meet last year's regs. And then somehow when they put it on track, it was even worse. Other than losing one of their drivers, not really that it's much of a loss. Rest in piss, Bozo, you won't be missed.
Watch.
Losing the title sponsor and having their freight delayed, which all sounds pretty bad. Everything on track for Haas seemed pretty damn good.
Yeah,
I was going to say, regarding the situation at Haas, I mean, it's... there's no doubt about it. I mean, it's not the most ideal circumstances if you're Haas on their end to lose Nikita Mazepin and lose your title sponsor, but at least from a driving standpoint, Kevin Magnussen is a surefire upgrade. Knows the team, knows the setup, has always been a solid midfield level driver in F1. That's a big plus. There's no getting around that. I mean, look, no disrespect to Pietro Fittipaldi, and even Pietro kind of admitted that... yeah, this is, you know, certainly, and you can understand why they put Kevin in instead, and that was probably the way to go on that one. Car looks solid. This could be a team that I think could challenge for some points. I really do. Like, the testing at the end was solid. Like, way better than I think people gave it credit for. And it looked like tanking last year certainly seemingly was a good idea. I'm very curious to see how much of this was glory runs at the end of testing and how much of it was genuine outright pace. But promising stuff, all things considered, you know, even which, again, not the most ideal set of circumstances at all.
Oh, yeah. Like, this is not like Braun GP in 2009, but I don't think this is Prost in 2001. Having glory runs to get sponsors and then completely pooping the bed regardless. This car looks like it will... they're not going to go scoreless this year. But what I really hope is that if they have a car that's this good early on in the season, there's opportunities for good points on the table. They need to go and get them now. Because we don't know how the other cars are going to progress in terms of their development. There's always a chance that they could start off really well and then regress as the season goes on by summer break, let alone the end of the season. So, yeah, if there's an opportunity to get both cars in, say, the top six or top eight in Bahrain, you got to go and capitalize that. You can't be throwing them away like those couple years in Australia a few years back.
Absolutely. And I think it's going to be kind of a running theme throughout the season preview that we expect the form book to be extremely volatile, as there's so many different concepts of car out on the grid that whichever one develops the quickest and has the highest ceiling is, frankly, an unknown.
Mm. Speaking of which, Alfa Romeo up next. They've cleared the decks for 2022. Valtteri Bottas comes in for the former Mercedes man himself with 10 career wins to his name. And China's first F1 driver makes it in as well. Guan Yu Zhou comes up as well. The big vibe here, just shaking off some, you know, not so nice labels that these two drivers have had over the years. Zhou, I didn't even realize, grew up in Sheffield, just up the road, where, you know, and said himself, quote, "I can't influence what certain people think. In my opinion, I showed in Formula 2 that I have what it takes for F1. I won races there and competed for the title. Now it's up to me to show my skills in F1 as well. I can't wait for it to start. In my first year, I really want to arrive in F1 and then score my first points." Valtteri, also excited for a new chapter, said, "I'm excited." Which, I love that there's still no word for that in Finnish, like he said a couple of years ago. "It's a new challenge for me. It's a new project, and in a way, you need a certain mindset for it. And I'm absolutely ready for that at this stage of my career. I've already gained quite a bit of experience. I absolutely feel that I have so much more to do to get better and so much more to give to this sport. As a driver, I think you never stop learning as long as you want to. So, of course, I'm looking at areas where I can be better, and it truly feels like now I can be just the best version of myself instead of trying to be something else and trying too hard." I love that Bottas basically gave it the "I'm in the best shape of my life" quote right there. more than anything else. But, I mean, is it fair to say, gentlemen, that I don't think any team stock took more of a beating over testing than Alphas?
Certainly over the Barcelona test, from what I understand. Towards the end of Bahrain, they started to pull it back together. There's potential here, but the reliability is the issue, and it's the same with Haas. But it's going to be a tough scrap for eighth place in the constructors. And I think them, Haas, and the Nets team we're going to talk about, they're going to be fighting for that eighth place spot in the constructors. At least on the current testing form book, which we all know could end up completely getting tossed out the window later on this season. Now, okay, I know that this has been, you know, not the biggest pro Valtteri Bottas podcast.
Really?
What does a driver like Valtteri Bottas, with all his front-running experience, give to a team that just had Kimi Raikkonen? What do they expect out of him?
All that front-running experience.
They just had Kimi Raikkonen, and, like, they should kind of expect the same feedback and direction that they got from Raikkonen from Bottas. But, like, the years they had Kimi, it didn't seem like they were improving. It seemed like they were going in the opposite direction.
They looked rough. Definitely in Barcelona. The theme of this year's testing is the word porpoising. And it's when the car suffers a stall of its floor and starts bouncing up and down as the car stalls and unstalls. You can see a perfect example of this with my co-hosts RJ and Dre here. The Alfa Romeo was porpoising so bad that it was actually breaking the car in the first test.
Bruh.
There's a team further up the grid where porpoising is a major piece of their preseason. But unlike that team, Alfa seemed to be getting on top of it on the last day of testing. But for me, reliability still has to be a concern when they burnt through that many components in such a short amount of time.
Cam, what does success look like for Guan Yu Zhou this season?
I think I don't necessarily know the answer to that. I'd like to see him give Valtteri, who's been very established in F1, a run for his money.
Mm-hmm.
Because for so long, that was the thing that Antonio Giovinazzi couldn't do for Raikkonen up until the point where the fate of his career was already basically decided.
I was going to say, like, a few points here and there would be great. you know, not very many crashes. Like, I'm not expecting him to be like head to head or in race trim better than Valtteri, because he's a good driver no matter which way you slice it. You don't fluke getting double digit wins in Formula One, okay? The man knows what he's doing. Yeah. You know, I don't expect Zhou to be competitive against him like that, but just don't put it in a ditch. Score a few points if the opportunity arises, and just mitigate errors, and he'll be fine. Like, I don't know what people are expecting out of a rookie in a really, really bad driver matchup situation. You're competing against a guy that's a championship runner-up and has 10 career wins to his name. There's not very many ways you can look bad here. Let's put it to you that way. Like, it's a low-pressure environment. Just maximize what you can get, and I think you'll be fine. I think there'll be a lot more expectations in year two for Zhou than year one, quite frankly. Like, it's a freebie year. As long as you don't stink up the joint, you should be fine, you know?
Yeah. And I don't think anyway. He will, because to your point about not being able to fluke 10 wins, Wan Yu Zhou was a title contender pretty much every year of his Formula 2 career. It may have taken him 3 years to get up and out, and he never eventually won the championship. Last year would have been his year, and then he just got slipstream passed by Piastri, but, you know... It is what it is, but I don't think he's as bad a driver as people make him out to be.
Well, that's kind of the angle that I'm going for, is that I do rate Zhou quite highly as a driver.
Yeah.
So I do have decent expectations for him, just because I like what I've seen out of him in F2.
Oh, yeah. Same.
Definitely. Should we talk about my beloved Aston Martin?
Yeah. Well, first we could talk about Williams. Because Williams paying tribute to LeBron James with two drivers with both of his jersey numbers, Nicholas Latifi and Alexander Albon. Alex Albon's back full time this year. He talked after the shakedown session, not a test, but it's really a test, but not really Catalunya session. I think once you're on the limit and things are stiff, you got to be a bit more precise when you're driving these things. So I'll be interested to see what the cars are like when you're driving on the limit. It feels almost like an F2 car in terms of the way it responds, but with F1 corner speed, so it doesn't feel very alien. We're in Barcelona, which is a smooth circuit, so I'm not sure if that was going to change too. I'm trying to think now. Austin, we'll see. It's feeling pretty good, to be honest. The car feels like it's a good place to begin with. We have a good foundation for the rest of the year to start on. Nothing obvious sticking out, which is always good. Obviously, it's a new regulation, so it's a bit of a reset for everyone, which I think helps me a little bit as well. There's still a bit of rust here, but otherwise, I'm shaking it off. And every lap I do in the car is feeling better and better. And that was in Catalunya, and then at Bahrain, the wind just kind of fell out of their sails. And it's like multiple outlets are predicting them to be 10th coming out of testing.
Oof.
If you don't know, Formula One still has 10 teams. What do we make of this?
You know, things were looking all right after the shakedown that totally wasn't a test. And as you said, the wheels kind of fell off the wagon. Day one looked all right. Not fast, but all right. And then on day two, human error caused a failure on the rear of the car. The brakes burst into flames, and it effectively canned an entire day of testing for them. Certainly a very radical car. If the Mercedes is the unside pod car, this just has all the side pods shoved up to the front of that section of the car. So they've taken some risks with it. It looks relatively easy to drive. It doesn't necessarily look fast.
And I'm not sure on this driver lineup either, to be honest with you. Like, yeah. Nicholas Latifi is now pseudo team leader. He's been a veteran now there for a couple of years. He's now probably going to be expected to lead this team. And, you know, it was always an uphill struggle when George Russell was the yardstick, and we all knew. Kind of knew how good he was as a junior, by comparison. Now you ain't got an excuse, Nicholas. Like, you've got Alex Albon alongside you, who, you know, is, again, probably better than what the internet thinks he is, but, you know, he lost his seat at Red Bull for a reason. I'm not convinced on the lineup. I'm not convinced on the car at all. Them losing a day's testing due to that brake fire was catastrophic. I want to believe in this team, but we talked about it before we went on the air. When was the last time Williams nailed a set of regulations? Anyone?
2014. Valtteri Bottas and Felipe Massa came out of the box, guns a-blazing, multiple podiums, probably should have won a race that season. Obviously, it was not sustainable that they would get every subsequent new regulation change right.
Yeah, but RJ, to counter that point, they've gotten a couple of those regulation... They got one of those regulation changes in 2019 so wrong that it effectively set the team on the course to die. Because Williams has different owners now.
And thank goodness they're still around. You know, maybe they're around, you know, under different management, maybe under a different identity. And I know people are, I would be upset about that. I would be shocked if whoever buys a team off in Hamilton Nets, you know, toss away the Williams name. But it'll be, but for now, like, I'm expecting Albon to come in and put his stamp on the team. I think Latifi took a major step forward last season, which was good.
I agree.
But now with... now that he's off the grid, Latifi comes back to being kind of the Mendoza line of Formula One. And I don't know what to expect out of him.
I'm just concerned that last year we saw legitimate progress out of Williams. They did a couple things to their car that last year, which made it very peaky. But when it did peak, it could get into the points. It could get into the Q3 on rare occasions through George Russell going.
Very soggy outlier in there, of course. But
there is one, but there are other legitimate Q3 appearances.
Oh,
due to George Russell going full 2021 LeBron James. 50 just to get him above water. I'm just concerned that the progress we saw out of Williams is going to swing right back to not the nadir of 2019, where that might be one of the worst cars to ever score a Formula One point. But I kind of get the feeling they're probably going to regress to their mean of knocking on the door of points, but they need a hell of a lot to go right to actually get them.
The King, he compared the situation to LeBron putting up 50 at the Lakers. As a Knicks fan, I think we should just put our arms around him and say, you know what, buddy, we're in this together, aren't we?
We're not in this together. The New York Knicks are in a way better position than Williams are.
I was talking about our respective teams, not just Williams, but yeah, you're right. You're probably right there. Speaking of underperforming teams, Aston Martin! Oh! Yeah, let's talk about these guys. Retained lineup for this year, Sebastian Vettel and Lance Stroll in the 5 and the 18 cars. It is a revamped Aston Martin team behind the scenes. Otmar Szafnauer left his team principal in the worst kept secret in Formula 1 last year. He definitely wasn't going to Alpine until he was. Said the other day, and I quote, "It was probably best for all parties I leave," which, probably goes to show you how last year went for them, really. In comes, and get your jokes in now, Mike Crack, chief engineer for teams like BMW Sauber and Porsche's WEC project. RJ, resist! And he made it absolutely clear over one of the team's priorities going forward. They want to keep Sebastian Vettel on the books beyond the end of this season, because he's in a contract year as that factory gets built by Silverstone. So, quote, "I think it's very important for such high-class drivers that they feel the support of the team. I think what matters here most is being transparent about what we expect, about where we are. And this is something that I handled also with all the drivers that I had in the past. At my former employer, we had more drivers because we had more projects and because you need more drivers. So it's quite crucial that you have them all embarked with what you want to achieve and there's no one left over. That does not mean you have to call them about everything, but you have to put an ecosystem in place where they could feel trusted and comfortable." I know he's got a bit of a reputation, Mike, for having to handle a lot of high egos and a lot of drivers in environments like that, but can they form a compelling argument to keep Sebastian around, fellas?
I think their number one argument for Vettel, like, to keep Vettel is simply, where else are you going to go? That's it. Like, I don't think there's...
That's what I was thinking.
Like, it's either stay at Aston Martin or retire. And honestly, besides that argument, I don't think Aston Martin have a strong argument to, like, a strong argument in any other area where it's, it doesn't feel like they're improving compared to other teams in the competitive order. It feels like the team is stagnant while teams around them are moving up in the world.
Yeah.
It's a strange thing for a team that's just invested in a whole bunch of new facilities. I mean,
the problem is that those new facilities are just now coming online, and we're not going to see the benefits of those until at least 2023.
Yeah, this is definitely not a team that's out of transition, that's still in transition from the Force India era. This is very much, it feels like a new team with a whole new set of issues.
RJ, what's that catchphrase that Maxwell Jacob Freeman comes out with?
I'm better than you and you know it?
The other one.
Oh, God. Oh, Jesus.
That Long Island is the greatest mid place.
They're mid.
Oh, yeah. I was completely spacing out there.
Mid.
They're mid.
You know, this is the year that Aston Martin should have. Last year, we know, was a blip after a really great 2020. Let's not get into why it was so great. And last year they were real rough. Not only did they lose a podium for fuel related issues, outside of a couple of podiums, they were hot garbage.
They were mid. They were the worst of the midfielders. They went from the best midfielder, arguably, to the worst midfielder in the space.
Didn't
of
we
the
give
year.
Them the floppy? Didn't we give them as an organization the floppy?
We did. Biggest disappointment. Mm-hmm. The biggest disappointment, and that's exactly how it felt. We all just felt the vibe that this is a team that punched well below its weight. And there's been nothing out of testing or the organization reach shuffle that's come around that's given me any more confidence that Aston Martin's going to magically find half a second in pace this year. This feels like 2023 is the all-in year, when really, if you want to keep your star driver on board, the all-in year is now. Like, this is the year where you need to say, well, look, if you want to keep your star man, this is what you got to do. And look, King's absolutely right, in my opinion, that Aston Martin's not really got a compelling argument otherwise. And the best argument they've got right now is, well, Seb's got no other options. Alpine looks secure. You know, AlphaTauri are not going to hire another man again. McLaren is locked in for the next 2 years. Ferrari has arguably the best lineup in F1. And the big two are not going to hire him again. So,
Sebastian Vettel's only other option is to go home and be a family man.
This is the problem with Aston Martin, is that, in theory, copying Mercedes' homework and drawing it in pink instead of silver should have given them the room to really go all in on developing the car for these new regulations. And even more so last year, when it was clear from testing that the car was a dog, that they should have put more into this year. And they've come out and they look like where they were last year. They look like they've made no progress, despite this being the year that they've been focused on, arguably longer than every other team on the grid.
They need to find something with this car as the course of the season develops, because it can't be like this. It can't be like this moving forward. I mean, you're still better than 1950s Aston Martin, but that.
Where's the bar, RJ? It's so low I can't
see it.
It's
subterranean.
Yeah, it's not good. It's, you know, in some stints the car looked okay. On other ones, it looked backmarker-ish.
Lance Stroll, be the race-winning caliber driver that I've always thought you could be coming up into this sport, man. Don't rest on your laurels just because your dad's a major investor in the team.
This is, what, year six of Lance Stroll? Like, this is it.
No.
Like, he's not going to magically find some pace again now. Like, Lance Stroll is the definition of the new Hülkenberg baseline. If you're better than Stroll, you're probably a good driver. If you're worse than Stroll, I'm going to have question marks about why you're here.
Dude, like, could you imagine going back to, like, early 2017 and saying, oh yeah, Lance Stroll is going to be a competent Nico Hülkenberg?
Yeah!
The disrespect to my Le Mans winner. Jesus Christ.
My man got carried and you know it. Anyway. While Cam chokes on his drink. AlphaTauri, everybody. Let's talk about AlphaTauri. As RJ points to his old to Dad's flag on the wall there for the old Minardi. Pierre Gasly and Yuki Tsunoda both return for this year in the 10 and the 22 cars respectively. And Pierre Gasly has made it absolutely clear he wants that Red Bull seat back. And he wants it bad. Pierre Gasly was on the Drivers of the Year last year. The 26-year-old is thinking bigger. He's got 2 years left on his current deal. But he wants the Red Bull seat that Alex Albon took away from him in 2020. Quote, Helmut and I said it's not confidential anymore that I have one more year after this year on my contract, he said. And obviously, either we make it with Red Bull or we don't. What's going to happen after that? At the moment, it's way too early to speak about it. I'm focused on doing my best right now. But obviously, I want to be in a fast car to fight for wins and victories, and that's the only thing that matters. I want to win in F1, and I've got a car which allows me to win. We'll discuss that with Helmut when it will be the right moment.
About that one, Chief.
I already have the feeling that Pierre Gasly is punching against the glass ceiling here, because I don't think there's much more in this AlphaTauri than what he had last year, because he was outstanding last year.
He was legitimate driver of the year candidate last year. He was superb.
Agreed. But is there anything from the AlphaTauri camp to make me think they're a genuine top five runner? Because we say this about AlphaTauri every year, but like, this is the year they'll challenge the top five, and it just doesn't quite happen for him year on year.
Opposite.
Those fives at AlphaTauri this year, they were pretty low key throughout testing.
I'd argue.
You know, in contrast to last.
Yeah, I'd argue kind of the opposite direction this year. Porpoising. Oh my God. There are videos titled Pierre Gasly Vibin'. Up and down, side to side, like a roller coaster. That car is slamming up and down all the way down the main straight at Bahrain. With the porpoising on the grid, I think only being matched by one other team who we will get to in due time. If you know, you know. I have to look at the other side of the garage, because we came into last year extremely high on Yuki Tsunoda after a great showing in F2. And he just kept throwing that car at anything solid for the first three quarters of the year. But in the last quarter,
he started great. Then the valley hit, and then he just started to turn it around. And I was surprised at how much he was struggling with his physical fitness throughout the season. Like, he was fairly candid about it. And it's not a thing that he's small of stature. It's just that, you know, he needed to be in better physical shape, regardless of his size.
Something.
And he hates going to the gym. I can relate. Gotta love me some Yuki Tsunoda.
Yeah.
He is the kind of character that everybody said Kimi Raikkonen was the last 7 years.
He's a disgustingly likable young man. He really is. And I feel old enough now where I can call Yuki Tsunoda a young man and not feel weird. He's a delightfully, like, just honest, like, I love Yuki. He's just so honest and, like, and just, he's just,
please, himself.
I'm rooting for him. I really am.
He's no BS in a good way. But
yes,
for me, first of all, mentioning the physical fitness, something racing drivers aren't athletes. He's got to take that more seriously this year, because with how physical these cars clearly are, that's going to be a factor this year. And I just want to see him keep improving in the way he was in the final quarter of last year, because I think his ceiling is extraordinarily high. He has the talent, but he's very much a diamond in the rough.
It's not a good.
We all know Red Bull does not have patience.
No.
Because Red Bull Junior Team reloaded, in case you did not realize. Hell, they got another Japanese prospect in the pipeline in Ayumu Iwasa.
They do.
Yeah.
To say nothing about guys like Jahan Ruvala, Liam Lawson, go on and on about, like, the dudes they have in the system that are just, like, pouncing on the opportunities, like, ooh, if this dude struggles, I'm all in on a seat.
Yeah, I could see Lawson, maybe Jack Doohan potentially as well in that mix as well as guys. I think King had a great question when he was taking Q and A's on the train about the next new winner in F1, and you mentioned Doohan. I was like, the more I thought about it, I was like, that's a great shout, given that the path to get to a race winning car is probably the easiest on his end. And Yuki screams the collateral damage guy if that was to actually happen. We know how this story ends. And it's a shame. Yuki said it himself. Franz Tost is a fitter man than he is.
Oof.
And he is literally three times his age. It's like, Franz, for those who don't know at home, is 66. He's pension age in the UK. And he still gets out of his bed 4 in the morning and does 10K runs. Perspective. So yeah, Yuki, I need to see more from you, buddy. And if you fix finger, they had a top five car last year. Yuki let the side down. He's not gonna get a pass 2 years running.
No,
Like,
and I have concerns about given the state of that car in testing, about how capable this car is going to be at consistently challenging for those solid points finishes. Because Pierre Gasly, more often than not, was best of the rest last year against the
Yeah.
clash of the Titans up at the front with Red Bull and Mercedes.
Of all the midfielders, I have the least question marks about Pierre Gasly going forward. He is not the issue here. It's number 22. And
The
that
only question I have about Pierre is who is going to give him his next contract?
That is going to be he could be one of the number one dudes on the board if the Red Bull seat doesn't happen. And we'll have to wait and see how the Sergio Perez experiment continues going forward. He's in a contract
All
year
right,
again this
it's
year.
halftime. It's halftime. We got our orange slices and Capri Suns ready. Let's talk about the calendar because we're in Bahrain this weekend, March 20th, and then
Yeah.
we're off to Saudi Arabia on the 27th. We get to our April stretch with the return of the Australian Grand Prix on April 10th and the Gran Premio de Emilia Romagna on April 24th. Brand new deal for them. Then we get to the May stretch, the inaugural Miami Grand Prix on May 8th. I may be there. Spanish Grand Prix, May 22nd. Memorial Day weekend in America, Monaco Grand Prix, May 29th. We come to June, Azerbaijan, Canada, June 12th and June 19th. That is weird logistics, but okay.
Weird.
British
Yeah.
Grand Prix, July 3rd. Austrian Grand Prix, July 10th. Then the French Grand Prix, a little bit later in the year, on July 24th. And then we go to Budapest and Orbán Land, the Hungarian Grand Prix, on July 31st. And then we get a summer break. We
4 weeks
get 4 weeks
long.
off to wait, more orange slices and Capri Sun for everybody at the factory. And then we're back to the Belgian Grand Prix at Spa, August 26th. Dutch Grand Prix, September 4th. Italian Grand Prix, the 11th of September. And then
Triple
we go
header.
to Singapore. Singapore's back October 2nd. And then Japan's back. Suzuka's back on October
Yes.
9th. 2 weeks off, we go to Circuit of the Americas. United States Grand Prix October 23rd, then Mexico City Grand Prix October 30th, the Brazil slash São Paulo slash Interlagos Grand Prix on November 13th, and then Abu Dhabi closes out the season on November 20th. So, a couple key points. We have some races that are back: Australia, Canada, Japan, Singapore. Good health willing, they're all going to be back. No more Portugal, no more Styria, no more Turkey. We have nine back-to-backs. We have a triple
Oof.
header late August, early September, when we come back from summer break. Saudi Arabia is now at March. Qatar's off for the year because they're building a new circuit. Miami's, of course, debuting. We had 23 Grand Prix, but then the Russian Grand Prix at Sochi was then Thanos snapped out of existence for reasons that are far beyond the scope of this podcast, or at least most of us on the
Don't
podcast.
invade
But
another country. General rule of thumb.
don't fucking do that. Do we think we're getting a 23rd race on there? Because I know it'd be good to just give us another weekend off, but I know Formula One is going to be
I get
aching for
that
that revenue of a
sweet,
23rd race
sweet
weekend.
revenue.
I've been hearing a lot of rumors what the replacement race could be. Obviously, some countries have interjected themselves into the conversation, while others have been real quiet about potentially returning to the calendar, where I think the two biggest contenders are the vocal option, Turkey, they want
yeah.
on the calendar. Quiet option.
Yeah, that, there was somebody found like a page that was selling Turkish Grand Prix tickets, like almost like lining it up as a dead ringer announcement they were going to replace it, and they still haven't
Can we just not schedule it at a time of the year where we're going to get the I can't believe it's not wet or dry Grand Prix?
And the quiet out option I've heard is a return to Germany at the Hockenheim Ring.
Yes.
I'll take that.
Yes.
I'll take that.
Bring back the drag strip of poor judgment.
Yes. My man. Look, I also love that Sepang's social media account was like, did somebody say cars? Cars emojis and eyes emojis.
I miss it.
Like, Sepang, you're the best bike track in the world. Stop. Stop.
Hey, it was a decent car track, too.
Have you back. Yeah, we'd love to have you back, but if you don't want to come back, we understand entirely.
Oh, yeah. My general thoughts are Saudi Arabia in March is weird. It's actually weird that we had Saudi Arabia just 4 months ago, and we're going back here again literally next week. That is weird, to say the least. I'm getting big 2006 vibes. I have Australia as round three in April. I think it's quite funny, but good. It's nice that
at least we're gonna have it.
It's nice because it feels like a normal calendar again. It feels like, you know, the staple F1 rounds are back. It's not just a Eurofest like it's been for the last couple
of years. Nature is healing. Where it's time to go back to brunch.
East Asia is back.
We missed them. You know, got 9 doubleheaders, a triple to start the second half of the year, and if they really do want to put a 23rd race back in there, it probably will be another triple header of some kind. I don't envy those teams in the back half of the year. Let me tell you.
Watch that empty space, just, you know, around Italy could get filled up.
Yeah. I think round 17, where as it stands, there's 3 weeks between Italy and Singapore. They could easily slot another round in there if they really wanted to. So just be warned on that one. If we get any news on that, obviously we'll let you know here on the podcast. But for now, it's 22. I'm totally okay if it stays at 22.
I'm pretty sure the vast majority of people are okay if it stays at 22.
Yeah.
But those numbers.
But we all know what those
revenue numbers.
It sucks that baseball players were locked out, but, you know, like, a shorter season wouldn't kill anybody.
No, it wouldn't. But, you know, that doesn't mean more money. Right. Top half of the teams, let's get back into it. Pretty in a bit of pink, BWT Alpine. Yes, the BWT guys came over, and King is... sounds like RJ slided off his chair as we already speak about this. L plan is not so rosy at the moment. Team's still the same, Alonso and Ocon. And yeah, the confidence coming out of Team Enstone at the moment... not great. Alonso was a bit more optimistic by the end of the test, saying, quote, car felt better than Barcelona. We brought some new things here and more to come in the next days and hopefully into the race one. Everyone is working flat out. Never a good sign. And I'm happy. I'm optimistic that we'll be much better in the next couple of days and especially in the first race. I think it's going to be a long game. That is for sure. The rate of development is going to be huge and there are 22 races. I remember here last year I retired the car and Esteban was P12. So no points after Bahrain. And then we won a race in Hungary. And we were enjoying the season from then on. So I think this year is going to be a long game to play and I'm confident we will have a good season. Gentlemen, is Fernando being optimistic again? I feel like Fernando's being unusually optimistic again.
This is optimism, Alonso.
Hopium would call that. Hopium.
What's the French word for hopium? Mid. How mid? Perfectly mid. 50%.
So basically, last year.
You know, technically, it's only hopium if it comes from the hopium region of France. Otherwise, it's just sparkling, misplaced optimism. What the hell is this? Like, you won a race is a little bit fluky, but all the same, we take those wins.
They don't count.
I'm a big Esteban Ocon believer. got the podium in last year, and you bring in Otmar Szafnauer, friend of the podcast, Otmar Szafnauer, I should say.
Good luck.
And then testing shows a car that has flashes of potential, but nothing consistently there to makes me believe that they're not going to take a step back from where they were last season.
There's been a lot of, I wouldn't say they reset their engine this year, so they're actually on the split turbo now. The only one left that isn't on a split turbo is Ferrari. And that is a major architectural change that you need to cope for. And they've had a lot of just minor reliability issues creeping in that have been taking some of their runtime away. I think it was Alonso clocked in a pretty good time right at the end of late on day three. But
got 120 laps in on that last day as well.
Yeah, so by the end of the test, they were looking a little better, but I just don't see them. I don't see them taking the next step. You know, was this 7 years into the 7 years into the 3 year plan?
Yeah, the 5 year plan. We're now on year seven. We've gotten one win out of this, and that was after a rebranding of the team and a global pandemic.
Yeah. And the mother of all fluky races to get that win.
Yeah, like, it feels like a running theme across all the midfield teams. We have one more left to go. It feels like the running theme is, it's a complete mess. There, maybe one of these teams where it's not a complete mess.
It's more of a Formula One gumbo, you see.
Yeah. It's a jambalaya that's gone wrong. It's like you're trying to save it here, you know, try and thin out a bit of water, and you're just trying. Like, whoever's the least messy of these teams will probably end up fifth. Yeah. And like, Aston Martin would probably take fifth right now.
Oh, they'd bite your arm off.
Definitely take fifth.
They'd bite your arm off for points, given how they looked in testing. And
you say fifth. Hey, I think it's gonna be fourth.
Really? Yes.
I don't know about that.
Wow!
Chief. I don't know about that.
Ooh, spicy. Okay. Should we get into that? I think King's referring to the next team on the list, and that's McLaren. Now, there was a bit of a gap between McLaren and Ferrari and the rest of the midfield last year. They've not had a good time of it of late. Let's get into that a little bit. Same lineup as I mentioned: Daniel Ricciardo and Lando Norris. They're talking about ease of use, right? James Key was speaking about this, especially in the case of Ricciardo, who we all know struggled a bit compared to Lando last year. Said, quote, "I would say overall, it's been maybe even an easier car to drive so far. I think when you look at the way we're generating downforce, we've got massive sort of brute force items, a huge front wing and a massive floor, which is very powerful. There is far less complexity above all that. And I think when you've got the sort of brute force aero, rather than the very refined fiddly aero we had last year, you're more likely to get a more stable working platform because you're using big surfaces rather than fine detail. I think that's probably helped us a little bit in that respect compared to last year. Overall, I would say we've taken a step in the right direction, but for sure, there's still some work to do." Two big problems with that. Number one, they've had huge braking issues throughout most of the tests. Which they've been there to.
Bahrain in particular.
They had to scramble to get parts out to the last day of the test in Bahrain to try and fix their braking problems. And Daniel Ricciardo caught the Rona again and missed the second test altogether, which wasn't ideal. He self-isolated. He appears to be fine. So, those are his best wishes to Daniel, of course. But I think this is one that will please the internet a little bit. We found out during that last day of the test that if Daniel Ricciardo can't go, we'll have to wait and see how he tests over the next few days. Alpine has said, "Hey, do you want to borrow Oscar Piastri for a round?"
Yeah, just for the reigning Formula 2 champion that we were just gonna have on our pit wall as decoration.
Oscar, you still on the couch?
Yeah, like his famous quote. I say famous, barely anyone watches Formula 2. When he won the Formula 2 championship last year, on the podium, he said that, "Yeah, I really enjoy this trophy, because next year I'm going to be the champion of sitting on the couch." which, oh man, if you're on Alpine,
I love this
wow.
Kid. Hello? He's the best prospect you've had in your academy since Grosjean. Hello? Anyway, yes, like, Piastri looks like he'll be the man to step in if Ricciardo is not ready to go.
I think we also
like,
need to put it could, because McLaren do have other options besides Piastri.
Yeah. They do have Stoffel Vandoorne and Nyck de Vries. Then remember, we don't race in Formula E again until early April, so those two are also in the mix, but I don't think McLaren would add him to their pool unless they had an intention to try and run him. That's the impression that I get. Especially given they've also been very busy signing Colton Herta to a development deal. So it's all going off at McLaren at the moment. I don't know what to make of this.
Rebuilding a young driver program all by ourselves.
You thought you were
going
to have to wait until Andretti entered Formula One to get an F1 deal.
Herta's like, just give me a damn seat, okay? Just give me a goddamn seat.
All in. Yeah. You know, McLaren were arguably the co-stars of the first week in Barcelona, along with Ferrari. One of the only teams to not suffer really from any porpoising, and they don't particularly know why. The car just doesn't do it. They were fast, they were consistent, and all of that came crashing down in Bahrain as they effectively had to scrap day one due to brake issues. They've not done any meaningful long runs. It's resulted in, quote, crispy components that mean that just any running they do is limited on how hard they can push and how long they can run. And Daniel Ricciardo got the aforementioned Rona.
Now, which, to me, despite the speed, pretty much McLaren's like course through testing worried me. First week, no issues. To me, that's always a bit of a red flag. And then second test, well, the test.
Nothing but issues.
Nothing but issues, and they were limited in how much running they could do. To me, testing is about trying to aggravate Murphy's Law. Trying to force problems out of your car so you solve them then and there and not have to have it crop up in the season.
The problems in this case were a balloon which exploded and covered everyone in garbage.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who puts garbage in a balloon? Don't you just take that out by barge? And then they're like a landfill? Is that what we're getting to? Like, when all the landfills are full, we're just putting our garbage and setting it off in a hot air balloon or satellite or something?
Yeah, this is... It's rough.
I think that's an adequate way of summing up McLaren in Drive to Survive Season 4. Basically, just a balloon of garbage and Daniel Ricciardo interviews.
And that's...
You know, if the balloon is full of garbage, it means there's garbage in the balloon.
Yeah, and that's the issue for me. That's another issue for me with McLaren is who had a torrid time last year other than his single race victory? Daniel Ricciardo. Who needed time to continue acclimatizing to McLaren's environment and car? Daniel Ricciardo.
Daniel Ricciardo.
Who lost the whole last weekend due to having the Rona and the poops? Daniel Ricciardo.
Oh,
that could not have been
like,
any worse.
Honestly, them signing the reserve deal with Piastri, them getting Herta on a development deal, that is red flags if you're Daniel Ricciardo.
They have every chamber filled in case you decide to walk.
I'm just saying, it's like, we know Ricciardo's got 2 years left in the deal. I'm asking, is there an exit clause in that contract after the end of 2022? I wonder.
Probably.
We were asking that
like,
before he
honestly,
won. Honestly, before he won
with
Italy.
McLaren, you know, teasing that they could enter other championships, and it's not, they've done something like this before, where you got a contract to be a McLaren employee. It doesn't say you have to drive.
Sorry.
Hey, Daniel, how's Formula E?
Sorry, James. yeah, McLaren came into the test looking real good, came out of the test looking like 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag.
I get the feeling that like the potential is still here for a race-winning car, they've got to sort out the reliability. You can't beat this.
No kidding.
You can't come out of Bahrain with a double DNF, and that's what people are worried about. And look, we know Lando Norris isn't going to be the one pushed out the door if this team underachieves. No. Because Lando Norris is locked down to a good deal. He did everything but win a race. It probably could have, but he fell on his sword.
Yeah. And Lando's got three more years. Has good fits, Lando's got three more years on his deal. They love him in McLaren. He is the centerpiece of that team.
Friend of the show Hazel Southwell is describing this as his evil twink arc.
Moving on!
Scuderia.
It's time for him to become a more ruthless competitor.
Ferrari.
Oh, boy. It's time. It's time to get back on the narcotic, baby. It's time we all got back on the narcotic for the Chuck and Chuck show.
It's back. Oh, God, no. I've just had war flashbacks to all the times I picked Sebastian Vettel to win the title, and I'm just like, no, not again. No, I've been there.
Oh, Scuderia Ferrari.
I know how this narcotic smells.
Scuderia Ferrari. They've been banking on these regulations for quite a while.
No.
They got back to pretty much where they should have been after, you know, the rebuild last year and their worst season in 40 years in 2020. And if preseason testing was anything to go by, Ferrari might have the least question marks hanging over their head heading into round one. On average, their two drivers, Charles Leclerc, who finished sixth, and Carlos Sainz Jr. finished fifth last year, had the best preseason of everybody, and this was backed up by basically everyone around them. Kind of the kiss of death from the rest of the paddock. If you ask Christian Horner, quote-unquote, I think that the Ferrari are the form team you'd have to say at the moment, but hopefully we can be there as well. More on that in a little bit. Ferrari even had time to poke a little fun at their rivals' claims of playing down their pace, and Carlos Sainz claiming bullshit on Lewis Hamilton saying that the Mercedes is just hot garbage.
Honestly.
Quote, I think it's typical Mercedes hyping up the others, then we come to the first race and they blow the competition away, which is typical. If it was the first year they did that, then maybe I'd believe them, but they've been doing it for 6 years now and they keep crushing us in the first race. So as you can imagine, I don't believe much. Gentlemen, your preseason champions, Ferrari.
Sort of.
Hang the banner. Hang the banner. Preseason champions.
Nope. Put take that flag down from Maranello.
Take that down. I think I'm 100% on board with Sainz saying it's pretty much, like, as much as it is a poke at Mercedes, it is pretty much Carlos Sainz declining taking the trophy for preseason champion, because everyone knows what that means. Very rare that anyone is the best team in testing and show up to the first race and win.
Last year was such an outlier, and even then, Red Bull didn't win round one.
Yeah, yeah. We've been here before, folks. Trust me, I know. It's the honey trap. Everything about Ferrari looked great coming out of Bahrain. They were consistent. They were fast.
This is a race-winning car. We don't even need to make a driven bet on this. They're going to win a race. They're going to win multiple races.
They look solid. They were bomb-proof, reliable, basically all the way through the test. They have a little bit of porpoising, but not too much. Not enough to really negatively affect the car. And they've been able to cure what little they did have through some minor upgrades. Nothing to the effect of the two teams that we're going to talk about next.
Yeah. And
what's the side pod?
I'm going to say this now before we get to the final two teams. I think all top three teams will win at least two races each. After that point, whatever happens, happens.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The big thing for me with the Ferrari is that it looks relatively easy to get good lap time out of. You put it out on track, it works. How high that ceiling is, we don't know. We don't know for any of these three teams. But early on, at least, if their car is as good as advertised, and just as good as it looks out on track, they've got to drive home some big points early.
I was going to say here, but this is Ferrari, so we're inevitably waiting to see which creative manner they fuck this up.
No one. And I mean...
it happens every time.
No one can throw away a race quite like the Scuderia. Maybe Kyle Busch, as a result of Sunday's NASCAR race. But as a close fight at the top, Scuderia Ferrari.
No, like, before testing. Like, what I mean before, not like a week before, but the month before testing. The way it's things seemed at Ferrari, it looked like things were desperate. Like, literal, hey, Jean-Todd just left office. Maybe we could sign him on as a special advisor. Desperate.
They're out here dragging what... Look, Rory Byrne is a very, very old man. Let him rest, for God's sake.
He's in his 60s now, I'm sure.
You can't keep calling him to fix the car every time there's a regulation change.
We are bringing back the 2000 Super Team one more time. It's like the Rolling Stones going on tour again. It's just like...
No.
We're going to keep
going
forever.
Despite all those claims, it seems that Ferrari haven't completely righted the ship, but it seems like they're heading in the right direction. Which is... Yeah, that's good at least, and it's and something that we don't say often about Ferrari.
Finally, the Big Dick Six is back.
Maybe seven if Lando is Lando keeps on his form from last year.
And maybe eight if Daniel Ricciardo gets better and gets acclimated in the team. Dre, I know how much you love Drive to Survive's very creative editorial storytelling. How long is it going to take before the Chuck and Chuck show implodes? Do you think there's needle in this team pairing?
It depends. How much are you paying the Netflix editor? I'm going to slip in my bag under the table and see what comes up. Honestly, I think they'll be fine. Look, I think they're a great pair. I think they're the best lineup in Formula One when it comes to sheer driving talent. I think they're superb. I think Leclerc's only getting more mature with age. And look, Sainz is like the class clown. And I mean that in a good way. Like, in the paddock, he's funny. He's like going. I think they'll be fine. I honestly do. Until they hit each other in Monaco and then it all goes to shit, inevitably.
I disagree. The moment you said this is the best driver pairing in terms of sheer talent, that's like red flag. Also the fact that Binotto has already said that they don't have a number one driver going into this season. Red flag.
It's a death.
He's not wrong.
You know, there are many red flags in the supporter section of Monza. I'm just saying.
I hate that King is not wrong about anything he just said. I'm just like, shit, he's right. Yeah, like it's true. They are very similarly matched in terms of talent, and you know, they haven't taken each other out yet.
The only way that things remain in perfect harmony between Leclerc and Sainz is if the Ferrari isn't a good car, and then for Ferrari, that's not good.
And then Ferrari spins them both.
Mick, it's your time.
We just like what we saw to Kevin Magnussen as return to Haas. Hey, stranger things have happened. Though I do think this is the year that Leclerc finally wins Monaco.
Maybe. Oh, yeah. Man. Low grip Ferrari. It could certainly happen.
That's my prediction every year, and I'm sticking with
it. Now let's call what I like to call the Twitter villains. Red Bull Racing. Oh boy. This is gonna be good. Red Bull Racing, unchanged lineup, Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez. Now, this is going to be fun. Now, they left a statement of intent right at the end of testing. The fastest overall time, major upgrade of the final day. Verstappen, 7 tenths quicker than the aforementioned hyped Leclerc on that last day. Max admitted he wasn't at full beans, but optimistic about the direction the team's going and said, quote, I think the main focus about the tyres that we're going to use next week is that the car was feeling all right and we went through our program we planned to do, and that's always possible, I think. Always positive, I should say, I think. He added, of course, the car is better in low fuel and naturally on high fuel. The car is a bit lazy and it doesn't really do a lot, but it's the same for everyone. I think the new parts which are on today also worked well, which you always hope for. Gentlemen, I think they're the favourites, which is a weird thing to say going into a season, because I've not said that about Red Bull in like 9 years.
I wouldn't say they're the favourites, but they have everything together before everyone else. Like, I'd say they're the most stable team. Don't know if they're the best team, but they're the most stable team.
They're the team that's like they could race tomorrow if it came down to it right now. It was like Suzuki at MotoGP last week until the clock started running. But yeah, they feel solid. The car feels solid. It looks solid. Verstappen looks happy. This seems positive. Cam, talk me out of this.
No, I won't. I shan't. I can't. And it's not just because of this fine Honda Vintage Culture jacket that I'm wearing. It's not a Honda anymore. It's a beautiful jacket. Trust us. It's only an HRC. Red Bull caught a lot of eyes in the first week when they showed their real car. And what the hell are those side pods? What the hell is that front suspension? What is this? And through talk of the car being a bit overweight, talk of maybe starting this year's development late from the push last year, that the Red Bull looked a little bit unfinished. And I held that same opinion that people were seeing trackside right up until about the last day of testing, when they put a major upgrade on the car, sent Perez out, and he immediately went to the top of the timesheets.
Bang.
And this is going to be a running theme. All three of these top teams are BSing so hard.
Yep.
They got more sand than is out in the desert beyond the walls of the track. All three of them.
Someone's and bluffing.
All three of them are bluffing. And the Red Bull just looks good. It just looks really, really good in mid to high speed turns. It's on rails. Low speed, it's not as strong.
You see through the bluff. Yeah. Through the bluff, you see that this is a good car. And we know that, like, hey, Max Verstappen's the reigning
champion.
There is
no question.
There's no question about Max with his driving quality after last year.
Most podiums in an F1 season. Whatever this car has to give, he will get all 18 of it and then a little bit more. And Perez looked happy as a clam. Not quite on Verstappen's pace, but then Max Verstappen. But he looked happy.
Come on now.
But he looked happy, and after, I think, beyond a gearbox issue in the first shakedown test, the car was pretty solid reliability-wise. They just look really damn good.
Yeah, like this feels like the Red Bull of a decade ago.
Feels like the Red Bull of last year. Like, I get the same vibe from testing last year. And we know how last season played out.
Yeah.
Took a while to get there, and it was
maybe
messy,
the real
but we got there.
Maybe the friends we made along the way. We didn't make any friends.
Good news, gang, though. We get more Christian Horner interviews. Don't all look excited. Please don't all look excited.
I want no interviews from any of these top three team principals. Interview the technical directors. They're more interesting.
Agreed. Shall we talk about the reigning champions, the Constructors' champions, I guess we could say, from last year? The reigning Constructors' champions, the Mercedes-AMG team, the eight-time consecutive Formula One Constructors' champions, Lewis Hamilton and some guy called George in the 63 alongside him has apparently stolen Valtteri's seat, and they're going to run with it now.
I need to make a brief editorial. That is Sir Lewis Larbalesier Hamilton.
Yes, we did confirm the name change. Please don't come after us on Twitter. We have mentioned his full name.
His surname's going to be the same.
Which
he's just taking his mother's
surname. I don't
know how
to actually pronounce. Like, I've never heard anyone say it, because Sky actually interviewed David Croft about it, and Crofty went the entire interview without actually saying it.
I don't want to try and say it just because I don't want to disrespect the man's mom.
Yep.
No, exactly. No. Let's move on. Mercedes camp, not so optimistic around here. They interviewed Hamilton at the end of the Bahrain test, and he was not particularly happy about the situation. Quote, Obviously, it's a little bit too early to have those kind of thoughts. You was asked about, is this car even going to be a title contender? But at the moment, I don't think we'll be competing for wins. But there is a potential within our car to get us there. We have just got to be able to extract it and fix some of the problems, which is what we're working on. When asked if it was similar to last year, Lewis said, it's not as good. I don't think we're going to make it look as good as we did last year with a difficult season we had in practice and then switch over to the race. I think we have far bigger challenges this time and they are not 1 week turnarounds. I think they will take a little bit longer, but from what I'm told, we have a considerable amount of pace to find. The obvious observation,
get your jokes in now, folks.
Cam screaming into the void down there saying, liar!
Liar, but only to an extent. We've talked about porpoising. Ain't no car porpoising like the Mercedes. Thud, thud, thud all the way down the straights. You can hide one lap pace. You can hide straight line speed, and Mercedes were. They were running in the lowest engine mode, and they weren't even using eighth gear. But you can't hide what that car was doing on the straights. Jesus Christ.
It looks like it's not calibrated yet. It looks like the potential is there, and everybody was just going, like, they were all over the zero pods
like,
concept.
To me, it feels like over the course of testing, it was people just being just wowed, and then whatever they were wowed by, they're going to be champions. So Ferrari unveils their livery. Everyone's like, oh man, this is the car this year. They're going to be champions. Then they show up the test. Red Bull reveals what their actual car is. Red Bull are going to be champions. Like, we go to Bahrain. Mercedes shows the zero pod. They're going to be champions. And it feels like
whoa.
I'm getting very big Vince McMahon going gushing over Gary Stridham and the WBF vibes.
I'm not going to say Mercedes aren't going to compete for the title because they are Mercedes AMG Petronas Formula One team. They are going for nine consecutive constructors championships. However.
And Lewis has a chip on his skull from how last year ended. You may not have heard about it, of course.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have a can of Red Bull to sip here, but just think of the spiritual Red Bull I'm holding.
Not again.
But here's the thing. They have issues. They have real issues. They have issues real enough that they were having to hack parts of their floor off on the last day of testing just to get the car to behave. It's not that the floor looks basic, they were literally slicing pieces of the mouth of the floor off RJ.
Yeah, it feels like
the porpoising.
It feels like Mercedes created a platform that is on the bleeding edge of what's technically capable with the new regulatory set. And it's either they're going to unlock that platform and get it right and be a dominant team, or get it wrong and, like, them getting it wrong, it's not going to be, like, horrific. Like, oh, they're going to finish outside the points every week. But, like, they're not going to be competing for the championship.
Say, I get, you know, the unpods, right?
Yeah.
I get a feeling of another Mercedes-Benz-powered car that didn't end up racing about 19 years ago. And ended up taking some really, really major changes to work into a car that could race. I don't think it's that bad. But
You think this is an MP?
It's very odd, this car. In low speed turns, it looks like the X2010 from Gran Turismo. Speed turns, it is batshit crazy. They could lap the field at Monaco. Conversely, they would get lapped at Silverstone with the way the car is driving at high speed. Because it's bouncing so badly that the front of the car just doesn't stay in the corner. And when you compare that to when you compare that to the Red Bull where Max turns the wheel and it just bites, it's concerning. And Mercedes and Red Bull to a lesser extent, but Mercedes have always been the kings of platform control. Using what has been in the past, very trick suspension, to run a crazy aggressive aero platform and then keep it stable via various hydraulic means on their suspension. That's banned now. That's gone. Yep. That's hard banned out of the regulations. And that would, you know, we're seeing porpoising that probably we would have seen in the past on the last few cars, last couple of years, but we haven't seen it because of the ways they've been able to control that platform. And now Mercedes is in the wilderness because what they've, one of the key components of their car that they have built all of their cars on since 2014 is now gone. And how far do you have to retrace your steps to go find where your issue is that's causing this? Because if it's something where they can just bring a floor upgrade and cure most of it, Mercedes will be in the fight for wins. Mercedes might become dominant. If they can't, they might need to do a wholesale reset of their concept. And it's interesting because we have at the front, we have three totally different concepts between the Ferrari, the Red Bull, and the Mercedes, all equally radical in their own right. And we just don't know which one's going to work.
Yep. And
we have no clue. And that's and the beauty
especially
of it.
Over the course of the first three races, we got three radically different venues.
Yeah, this yeah, form back Bahrain, this form book is going to be
Saudi Arabia, and then
really volatile early on as one upgrade in one little area of a car, because we're this early in the regulation set, might bring you half a second because you can fix so many other issues with your car. Yep. And you can jump up the field.
Yeah.
And that's the case for every team on the grid right now.
And that's...
I feel like this is all distracting us from the inevitable discourse about what success looks like
if
for George Russell.
If you've got this much hype behind you.
Because people will be expecting him to be...
Good luck, kid.
People will be expecting him to beat Lewis Hamilton in every single race, and people will be expecting him to be like Valtteri
I'd
Bottas with two
my,
less
my
gears.
Expectation for Russell... To me, I say my expectations feel low, but for Russell, I just expect him just finish fourth. Like, especially with what could, how drastically the front of the field could vary if Russell could just finish fourth any given race weekend. That's pretty good for a first year.
Yeah, look, I'd say 250 points would be a pretty solid number. Maybe a little less, maybe 230. That wouldn't be a bad place to start over the course of the season. If you can steal the odd win here and there, brilliant. And the internet will love you. So, you know, you just get, you know, if you get a win, if the opportunity comes, take it with both hands. We know the kid is good. We just don't know how good he is. And look, no one with a reasonable mind has expected him to get that close to Lewis. Like, I would say... Beat number 11 in the purple car. That's your target, realistically. Because if you do that, you'll almost certainly win the title. At least the constructors. Like, because that'll be the contribution. Look, Bottas was a big contribution towards that for Mercedes last year. There's no which way you could slice it, you know. So that, I think, is a realistic aim. Good luck, George. You may need it. God. Let's do a little bit more guessing before we get out of here. I'm going to pose an over-under because I like doing an over-under because I'm a bookies man at the end of the day. Over or under, 5.5 different winners.
Yeah, I'm going over.
I'm hitting that over.
I think
I'm hitting that
we're going to get more than five. I think it's probably going to be like around like six winners, like just slightly more than last year. I don't think it's going to be that much overly over, but we'll hit it.
I think I'm right with King on that one. I think given how volatile this form book is going to be, I could say that any of the drivers in the Big Dick Six, and even McLaren, if they get their ish together, are certainly capable of winning races this year.
Yeah, because...
I'm going to say...
Yeah, because there's going to be, like, the development race this year is going to be a race. The competitive order in Bahrain is going to be completely different by the time we get to Barcelona, and then completely different by the time we get to Monza, and completely different by the time we get to Abu Dhabi.
This sport finds a way to disappoint. I'm going to say slightly
you
under
think someone's
gonna on this
nail
one.
It.
I think someone could nail it. I think that's possible. I think someone could get an upgrade right, and then they went like, if Max gets it right, he wins 11 rounds this year. Like, you know, that's, I could easily see
that
happening.
Another thing as well with, like, the Red Bull that I only just remembered as well, is that with the talk of the car being overweight, they're about 10 kilos overweight. Around Bahrain, that's worth about 3.5 tenths a lap. That is free lap time that Red Bull is going to find this year.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Constructors champs?
These cars are thick. I hope they race good.
Constructors champs, anyone? Don't all rush in.
Right, your internet connection is worse than Alfa Romeo's lap times.
God.
It's true. I was gonna say.
Red Bull.
Red Bull Racing HRC.
I'm going with Mercedes. I'm going with Mercedes.
Wow.
The star in it, it has replaced chaos in his sky again. The three-pointed star reigns.
Red Bull. I think it's time.
Why is King turned into me from last year?
Why is Mercedes the spicy pick? Christ, I was half thinking of going with Ferrari just for banter.
I almost want to say Ferrari because I think their drivers are the closest to one another.
But that's
the
problem.
And the most known quantities. But that exactly, that's the problem, is that they're both going to be there taking points off each other.
Ooh. Finally. Drivers champ.
I'm prepared to say that it's us. We're the champions for being blessed to watch this sport that is surging in popularity around the world. unless he gets sick or hurt, I'm going with Max Verstappen, and I don't think I need, for those of you who are listening on audio only, Cam has a Max Verstappen shirt. So it's obvious that you're picking Sergio Perez to win the title, right?
Clearly. Just to see Sergio Perez's dad ascend on international television.
Yes. I need a Perez win, just for that.
Dude, if he ever wins a race in Mexico, it is going to be
it's a national holiday.
given the current form of the cars and knowing that Red Bull still has some free lap time in it, I just can't pick against Max. He's too fucking consistent. A bad day for him is second place, and that's there's just, you have to be Lewis Hamilton good to counter that.
King?
And have to be Lewis Hamilton to counter that. Gonna go with one Mr. Lewis Hamilton for World Drivers Champ.
King is literally me from last year.
We've gone in reverse. Like we've gone the other way this year.
We've always been accused of being a Max Verstappen partisan podcast here.
Oh, of course. Of course. We love him here. But anyway, I am going to go with the man who I think is the best driver in the world right now, and I think that's Max Verstappen. And I think off the back of last year, he ticked any last remaining boxes or doubts on the man's ability. I think he is an exceptional talent, and I think he's going back to back. I really do. I think it's going to be Max cementing his place as one of the all-time greats with a second title, and he could end up with 30 career wins by the time this season. He could have basically matched Alonso's career by the end of this year, which would be just terrifying on raw counting stats.
You've killed RJ. You've murdered him. Yeah, I feel that to play to your point, right? If Verstappen has the equipment, he is going to win the world championship. It's almost, it's almost book it levels. It's kind of scary, actually.
I find it wild that Verstappen and Red Bull is King of Leeds about it. That's the safe pick. It's a weird vibe here, given that we're talking about an 8-time Constructors' Champ as their direct opposition. And here we are. We will see how we go. The very first race of the Formula One season this weekend in Bahrain, March 20th. It's a loaded weekend of motorsport. The 1,000 miles of Sebring in the WEC. We got IndyCar's XPEL 375 in Texas. MotoGP's return to Indonesia this weekend as well. Very early one for the Americans, unfortunately.
Also, I should have to add in, whoa, how do you talk about WEC racing at Sebring and not talk about IMSA's 12 hours
how
of Sebring?
How dare you?
Sorry. As you do. Yes, quite right. And, of course, Formula One in Bahrain. It's a loaded weekend. Keep an eye out on social media for how we cover all of that. It's going to be an absolute... It's probably
keep an eye on social media. Please use social media responsibly this year, you bunch of ding-dongs.
Yes, please do. Put your dicks away. But, yes, we'll keep our eyes on social media how we cover all of that, because it's probably the most stacked weekend of motorsport we're going to get all year. So check that out if you haven't already. Places you can find us one more time, youtube.com/motorsport101. Same on Facebook, Twitter @motorsport_101. Our handles are on the screen, @Harrison101HD, @RyanEricKing, @RJOConnell, @CBuckley917. Instagram, motorsport101pod. Website, motorsport101.com. We'll be back next week to review the most stacked weekend of motorsport of 2022, without doubt. But until then, I only have one last line to say. Hard work pays off. Dreams do come true. Bad times don't last, but bad guys do. Sayonara, everybody. Take care.
See ya.
Later, y'all.
Here for Mick Schumacher passing Alonso and Andrew Benson, deleting all of his social medias.
That's going to make it really awkward if I get seated in front of him at the media center again.